very much, Larry. So if I start, we're probably the jam in the sandwich. You've had a great talk just before us, and Cressida's coming up after tea. But I hope we're a tasty filling for you, whatever your preference is. I start by saying that leadership is not rank-based, in my opinion. It's in us all. And one of the characteristics, from my point of view, of effective leadership that I'm interested in has already been spoken about this morning, and that's around professional curiosity. So it's not a surprise that Dorset, for a very small force on the south coast, invests heavily in Cambridgeshire University and the police executive programme in particular. I think we've got four officers, well, I actually now see five officers in the room from Dorset. Two are currently out there pretending to study, apparently. And my view is that the reason we do that is because it's really important to invest in order to ensure that the resources that we have got are properly deployed. So I say a couple of things to officers and staff in Dorset. We can't afford not to do evidence-based practice. And the questions that I want everybody to ask is, why do we do that? Who says it's right? And is there another more effective approach? So taking up that challenge today are Steve and Gavin. Steve is going to talk to you in the field of KSIs, killed or serious injury collisions, asking, is there a different way to look at the problem? And Gavin, who will start, is going to take us through targeting victim harm in Dorset. Thank you.
Hello, everyone. I'm Gavin Dedford, I'm DCI from Dorset Police, and I'm a public protection officer. I'll talk about Dorset very quickly before I go on. It is a tourist hotspot as well, and benefits from the good work in Liverpool. It's semi-rural, so coastal town with two main conurbation areas, a population of about 760,000, and quite an elderly population, just to, so you know, it's generalisable to your area of business. So I kept mine really simple. My thesis title was Targeted Victim Harm in Dorset, and I managed to leave the Dragon's Den with just two research questions. Is there a power few number of victims who suffer most harm in Dorset? So by that I mean, is there a small number of the victims, a small percentage, who suffer the highest harm? And I've got a bit here about talking about Cambridge Crime Harm Index, but you already know a lot about that. But I will mention it, talking about victims, because we're talking about crime harm differently. I don't want to belittle the amount of harm each victim would suffer by giving them a ranking, and it's quite subjective. We know from the studies of Shatland Hall, Maguire and Dr. Angel about the different harm levels that people suffer when they are a victim of crime. And I don't want to belittle anyone for suffering less harm than another, but it's a good way of using evidence-based policing to help us rank order who does suffer the most harm by numbers of days in prison. And even if you are subjective to think that some crimes are more harmful than others, selling a Wolfgang in 85 and 64, doing surveys, actually found there's quite a lot of parity between people who thought some crimes were more harmful than others. Actually, there were some consistency in the way that they rank ordered harm. And then if there was a power few number of victims, I wanted to know if there are any factors associated with higher harm and no harm victimisation. So to do that, my methodology was all about the data. Ian Button mentioned you have great ideas and you have great amounts of data. I had 4 years' worth of data, but they weren't compatible at all with my study. So I had to get new data. So I had 1 year's worth of data from 2015 to 16. That was on a computer system called Niche, which was very good for my study, isn't it? It broke down the crime types into specific areas so I could see how much days in prison harm were caused to each victim. I had 30,000 crimes, just over 30,000 crimes. There's more crimes than that, only slightly recorded in Dorset, but using the methodology of the Crime Harm Index, I removed business crime and state-based crimes that are affected by proactive patrol or over-keen shop detectives. Downloading that, I had 25,000 victims, so I had a big Excel spreadsheet, thanks to my performance department at work, and I simply just converted thanks to the excellent work of Eleanor Nehru, who systematically went through all of the sentencing guidelines, just simply converted a list of crimes into a list of harmful events. So I had a number of victims that had suffered harm instead of just a long list of crimes where they may or may not appear as a repeat victim. And simply, I rank ordered the victims from highest to lowest. And this is the first time that we'd reviewed crime data in this way in Dorset. So the findings by volume I've just mentioned because it's good to compare. So this is what you might see, is there was repeat victimisation, just over one crime per person. 12% suffered between 2 and 14 crimes just in that year period. I couldn't go further back. And the reason for that was we were back record converting our computer system at the time. So although the data was there, it wasn't readily available at the time of your study. So if you're doing a thesis next year, get your data now. The average age was 40, big old range in Dorset. And just over half were male. And a lot of the crimes you'll see was a volume crime. But when compared that to how harm was recorded, and the categories are based on our performance data, you can see the large volumes in the areas that you would expect, but big high peaks for harm. So if you were to tackle harm in your area, for example, vehicle theft from vehicles, by halving the number of vehicle crimes, you could reduce your volume by 4%, but it would reduce your harm score by 0.17%. You reduce 50% of your robberies, 96 crimes, you reduce your harm by 2.5%. So it's just a different way of looking at your metric, what you want to reduce, volume or harm. And I will say throughout, harm shouldn't replace volume, I think it should complement it.
So Gavin, just to clarify for everybody who may not be able to see the fine print, it's the purplish line that is the harm, it's the green line that is the volume count, is that correct?
Yes, that's correct.
For the same offence types.
Yes.
Going together.
Yeah. And within, and it's worth noting, thank you, within violence against the person, there's a whole range of harm, because you have your common assault at a very minor level on severity, and through to your murder at the top end of your severity. So that's where your performance data is based on volume, and not so much guided towards harm. So looking at harm, so just under 1.4 million days in prison was harm was suffered by the victims of Dorset. The average harm per person is 54, I think. It's good to start seeing the numbers, actually, because I think in your experiment, 800 days in prison, is it your experiment for your offenders? And you start talking about your harm scores, days in prison, you can start to see the effect that it has. So my harm score was that, and it ranged between 1 to 5,476 days in prison. And my highest harm victim was just 4 entries on my original crime data sheet. And it's a child who has suffered 3 rapes and an assault and became the highest harm victim for that one period of time in Dorset. And it just raised, you talk about the severity score being quite cold, but you just give someone the number, but actually it raised this child to the top of the list as being the most harmed person. And then 12% of the victims suffered a harm score of 1 day's worth of sentencing guidelines, 1 day in prison. So you can see that there wasn't an even distribution of harm. It's simply the excerpt from my spreadsheet. So my top person had 5,476. It's a few below it with 5,475. They're people who were murdered in Dorset, so that's the harm score in days in prison for offence of murder. So it's subjective for you to think, can someone suffer more harm than someone that is murdered? I don't think that's the question that needs to be asked. I think it's the number of days in prison and the severity. Yes, the people have been murdered and it is extremely harmful, but this person has suffered a lot of harm and can't be ignored and would be ignored potentially if they were hidden within crime data. And simply by adding the harm scores together, then adding them to the next one, and getting the cumulative percentage of harm score, I managed to identify the distribution of harm amongst the victims, which gave me these curves. So your red one is your volume. That's the distribution of crime counts per victim. So there will be some spikes for repeat victims. But your blue one is your cumulative percentage of harm for total harm per victims. So when I started my thesis not knowing if there was going to be a power curve or not, when I saw the blue line, I was very happy and just emailed everyone that line. Nobody knew what it was talking about. But you can see a small a small number of victims along the bottom row suffered a large percentage of the total harm. So my thesis is, who to target to reduce harm using the crime of harm as a metric, then these are the people that I would suggest require targeting. So I want to know who those people were. So I broke them down into the power few and the not power few. I don't want to say harmed and not harmed, because all victims of crime are harmed. And you can see that on the blue column on the left. So the number of victims they suffered, so a number of crimes, less than 5% of all the crimes, and they were under 4% of all the victims, but they suffered over 85% of the crime, 1.1 million days worth of imprisonment. Average crime per person is obviously higher, but the average harm per person, 1,228 days in prison against 8.34 for the people not in the power few, and against obviously higher than the average. The interesting thing with this is, and it's with evidence-based policing, the morality question is, do you stop or do you just improve? Do you ignore the 96.25% of victims on that side and focus on these, or do you enhance your service or target your resources better, as seen in Greater Manchester? And that's it in a different way. So those people in the red on the left represent all my victims in that amount of harm. And it's not just harm for Dorset Police, it's the 2025 vision of policing, the collaborative work with partners. They're people who will have an impact on all of our partner services, like the $1 million Murray paper that you would have read. It's not just Dorset Police, there'll be lots of other services, rape crisis, sexual health, SARC services, and things such as that. So it's very much working with partners. I was interested with the questions about how do you engage your partners to work. I think the evidence would support that. So my second question was, what factors are available that help identify high harm and lower harm? The backpacker conversion for niche wasn't completed at the time fully when I was getting my data downloaded, so I didn't have a huge number of variables to work from. But repeat victimisation was something that became obvious. Ken Pease has done a lot of work on repeat victimisation. I was expecting to see it in there. So 12% of all of my victims were repeat victims. And they together suffered 30% of the total harm for my study. But there was a power few within those repeat victims. In fact, 84 times more harm was suffered by the repeat victims in the power few cohort than in the not power few cohort. In fact, 256 victims were repeat victims inside the power few cohort, and they suffered 26% of the total harm, those small number of people. So if you were to target repeat victims, for example, you would have to look at the harm can complement your volume data. And then further to this study, we looked at possible preventable harm. So after the first offence for a repeat victim, 15% of the total harm was in subsequent offences. So it wasn't covered in this study, and I'm sure there'll be people who may want to consider it for following years. But are there any algorithms that can be developed to identify high harm repeat victims to prevent possible harm in the future? It's a question that I'll pose to you. You can pose your questions to Steve after this presentation. Harm by gender and age. So the average age was 40 in the general population. Actually, power few victims were 10 years younger on average than people in the not power few. And on average, they were 30 years old or 31 years old. But the modal value was 16. For the not power few, the average was 40, and their modal value 21. So there were certainly some findings that a correlation between high harm and younger victims. The gender split, I think, if you remember from the beginning, just over half were male victims who suffered harm in Dorset, but 58% of victims were female compared to 46% in the not power few, and that increased to 66% of the power few when looking at repeat victims. It wouldn't be a surprise, because the number of sexual offences and rapes within the power few were linked to female victims. So as I conclude, I will say that, like my children with their meal, ketchup complements every meal according to them. Harm data complements volume data, and I'd urge you not to separate the two. Consider using it. These are things that we're doing in Dorset, so consider using it in your performance data. We have certainly have a priority to reduce harm in Dorset, and now we have a metric that we can have to use it. Jay Radcliffe would say that we should focus on harm reduction and not crime fighting, and all of our forces, by stealth or otherwise, have all been benchmarked by the Office of National Statistics, who put out their severity score, which I know there are some differences between the Cambridge Crime Harm Index and that, but we've all been benchmarked for harm in any case. Consider harm when allocating your resources. No, public protection in Dorset has priority for staffing due to the high harm offences, and actually use it to complement your policies and your mission statements to target harm. Working with our prevention directorate, identifying who are high harm victims. So I don't want to victim blame through the study or single people out for being victims of crime. But if people are going to be a suitable target for crime, how do they know they're going to be a suitable target unless we use our evidence to say? So robbery victims within Dorset, looking at the evidence, would suggest that maybe if you're a young male in your teens, you may be more likely to suffer robbery than somebody else. So we should be using that data to target our potential suitable targets to prevent crime. And lastly, better partnership targeting. So I mentioned the child at the top of my high harmed list. That child is now, the details have been passed to the section neighbourhood inspector, and working with partnership coordinating groups with partners to identify who are their top victims offender locations, and they're now identifying these people and places based on evidence-based policing to target them to reduce harm. Use data to develop algorithms to help detect and prevent high harm and victimisation, which I've already mentioned. But I'll also just finish to consider weightings. And I know it's difficult. You might want to consider weightings for your force and your own force priorities. But something that bugs me a little bit with the weighting of high harms is if you have your high volume, low harm victims who suffer ASB or harassment, and is how do you raise them up to show that their harm is being suffered? You can do that by simply complementing it or having both running at the same time, volume and harm, or you could add weightings to the number of offences that they suffer to raise the attention for repeat victim targeting. That's all I want to say. I think that's me done. Thank you very much.